are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts
on LA Talk Radio, as always presented by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as a presenting sponsor and very excited about our show today, Michael, aren't you?
I am, too. And, you know, we have some wonderful guests, Paul. We will be speaking with the beautiful and talented veteran nightclub star Barbara Van Orden, who is with us here in the studio. A little later in the show, we'll be talking to Barbara.
And by phone, we'll be speaking with four-time world champion, four-time U.S. national champion, Olympic gold medalist, and figure skating legend Scott Hamilton from his home in Nashville. He'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes.
Indeed.
We're very excited. We're on a big pedigree of guests here today.
We are.
Very excited.
You know, before we talk about our week, as we always do, Paul, I wanted to acknowledge one of our sponsors to Performing Arts Live, which is one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're very grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our weekly arts calendar.
And as always, we'd like to thank, as I mentioned earlier, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry's standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
So, Paul, how was your week? It was a big week with the
week,
Halloween.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I'm a little bummed out, Michael. I got to tell you, I got oil on my shirt.
Oil on your shirt.
And you know that I'm persnickety, and you know that I'm fastidious, and I got this oil. I don't know what happened. I turned 45, and I stopped knowing how to eat. I like Bob like one of those thermometer ducks and don't use cutlery or whatever. My shirts, every single one of my shirts has an oil stain on it.
It is happening more frequently. I've noticed I just didn't want to say anything about it.
I know, see? I thought it was happening. You're always the first to point it out. That's a nice shirt, Paul. Oh, but there's a little stain. Just a small stain. No, my week was fine. It was a Halloween weekend, obviously.
Indeed.
Did you do anything special for Halloween?
It worked, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of interviewing Andrea McArdle, who was the star of Annie on Broadway,
and
who all these years later is now starring as Miss Hannigan.
Is it Andrea or Andrea?
Andrea.
It is Andrea.
Did I say it otherwise? It's Andrea.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if that was just you being affected or if that was actually her name.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. No, I spent the day in Long Beach with her yesterday before the matinee, and we interviewed her and the director of the show, and it was a fabulous afternoon of seeing her go, you know, full circle from her life on the stage in 1977 in the title role of Annie to now playing Miss Hannigan all these many years later. And she was fantastic.
And she was a lovely woman, too. We interviewed her by phone. Was it last week or the week before?
It was the week before.
Yeah. And she was just very, very sweet and very kind. And nice to hear that the show... You're going to talk about the show later on.
We
right?
are. Yes, I am.
Would love to.
Absolutely.
But I didn't... I had my first weekend off.
You did.
Because I've been working on the show for so long. So I did had the Halloween off. And I was reminded of my first... Well, my first Halloween in the big city, as they say,
yes.
And I moved to Chicago. I moved to Chicago in 87, a couple of years after a year after I got out of college. And it was Halloween night was when I moved in. And I moved in. I didn't know anyone.
A little scary. Huh?
Yeah, I didn't know anyone in the city. I was all by myself. I had taken an air mattress on the plane with me. And I had, so that was it.
It was a smart look traveling, taking your
pathetic,
air mattress
yes,
with you.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So do the air mattress, and I'm in an apartment. I got no furniture. I got nothing. I got no job. And I'm fairly down about it. You know, I knew two people in the city. They weren't there that weekend. So I said, I'll go across the street. There's this bar restaurant across the street. So I go over there. And I'm sitting at the bar, and I feel like George Bailey. I'm just, like, sitting at the bar, like, so depressed. And this car pulls up, no doors, windshield smashed, front end of the car was like an accordion. And I'm just like, how in hell is this car able to be on the road without them getting a ticket or whatever? And two guys got out Halloween night, and they're dressed like crash test dummies. And I was like, that is the most brilliant costume I've ever seen. And immediately right then, I knew that I would love Chicago and I love the mentality of the people there. To have anyone who had the creativity to have their their Halloween costume encompassed their vehicle, and they got out and they had it all down. They were like walking like robotic and everything, and it changed my whole mood right there. So it's a positive Halloween memory for me.
Didn't you also, though, at one point in your life, Paul, you went to a party and you dressed as a celebrity who had a dead career?
Yeah.
No. I think that was it, wasn't it?
When I was in college, we used to have dead celebrity parties where you had to come dressed as your favorite dead celebrity. And yes, I wrapped myself in celluloid and attended as Pia Zadora's film career, which was just a little on the bitchy side, I guess. But I did. That was very, you know, you're all snarky in college. You know how you get.
Well, you know, and here's this is what I saw. I mean, this isn't as funny as what Paul was just describing, but I did notice a little fashion trend happening. I thought it was relative to Halloween this year, but in fact, it actually wasn't. It was a couple of days before Halloween, and I saw two adult men on separate occasions go into the same market that I shop in wearing pajamas. Now, one was pajama tops and pajama bottoms and a actual, like a leather coat. The other was in pajama bottoms and dressed very nicely, beautiful sweater and a coat and shoes, both of them.
Which is somehow more unnerving to me that they would have a coat and a sweater on top of the pajama bottoms. It's just a little stranger look.
So I don't know. Barbara, you're very fashionable. I mean, is that a fashion statement that's happening amongst men?
I have seen it, though. I have seen it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You have seen it.
Yes, and I know about Chicago.
Do you?
Talk a little later about
that. Yeah, no, we'd love to.
I know about Annie. Marty Charnin is a dear friend.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that, too. But right now, waiting in Nashville, Paul.
Yes, as previously stated, one of figure skating's most legendary and beloved stars. He's also one of network television's most articulate skating analysts, a two-time best-selling author, a humanitarian, a cancer survivor, and an inspiration of hope, courage, and determination to millions of people around the world. He's on the line now. Please welcome Mr. Scott
Hamilton.
Go on.
Keep going. I was loving the introduction. Did you run out? You should have run out about 30 seconds ago.
I have to tell you, Scott, I know that you're an old friend of Michael's and you've known him for years. So we haven't met yet, but I have to tell you how envious my wife is that we are just talking to you, because I'm telling you right now, you do not have a more devout fan than my wife. And she's just followed you forever and is just so been so moved by your work, not only your brilliant skating, but your humanitarian work as well. And it's a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. And you know, it's funny, the further I get away from that point in my career, that, you know, the more that means to me. So I really appreciate that so much, and please give my best to her.
I certainly will.
And she's a lovely lady. Now, Scott is originally, ladies and gentlemen, from Ohio, and then he started training in Denver when he was a young one, and training for what certainly became his career. And then he was a resident here of Los Angeles and met a lovely, lovely lady who has become his wife, and met her actually in Tennessee. And now they're
it's, you know, marriage and family is a wild and bumpy ride. And I'm learning that, you know, we got two boys. And they're, you know, it's like boys, they definitely, you know, have these odd, you know, self, like, just throw themselves into everything tendencies where they're absolutely convinced they can't get hurt. They know they can't get hurt. There's nothing about them that says, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get hurt. Well, I went out to pick up some dinner for, you know, everybody tonight. My wife's having a girls' night out, so I got the boys solo tonight to put them down for bed, which is a blast, and I love it. So, you know, I leave to go run and get some groceries real quick, and I get this phone call that Aiden is exploring the backyard, fell off a wall, and bashed his nose. He's going to have a big black eye for the CARES benefit this weekend.
Oh,
we always
gosh.
Take a big photo at the end with our, you know, musical artist and the entire cast. So Aiden will have a nice big shiner for that one. So that'll be a story. I'm sure he'll tell everybody that, you know, you see the other guy or something like that.
It's just wild.
You can't turn your head for 2 seconds. And I'll say this, you know, I've said this 1,000 times, but by the time they're 6 or 7 years old, you'll lose track of how many times you've saved their lives.
Yeah.
They're just How do we get to this age? I mean, we're guys. How do we and you know, it's insane. It's just absolutely crazy. So I'm expecting the little one, if he hears my voice, to come barging into the office and I want to talk now. He's almost three. Me talk now. I want to talk now. Is that grandmommy, papa? I want to talk now. I used to travel the world and entertain thousands of people in full houses in Madison Square Garden. Now it's like I'm negotiating with two-year-olds. And I'm not very good at it.
I think one of the best descriptions I ever heard was Bill Cosby used to say that the definition of a two-year-old is any child with a right arm reach of 8 feet. You can't keep anything out of their way, and they will get into everything, I think.
Oh, it's amazing. And, he's not a snooper. He's not one of those things that's going to go into a drawer and then pull out something and lose it or throw it down the grate or something like that. He's not one of those. But he wants to be engaged all the time. He's got to be entertained, or he's got to be talking to, or he'll get on the, he'll look at my phone, and he'll put this little face, he'll look at his face saying, can I make a call? And he's figured out, by the time he was about 23 months, he'd figured out my iPhone, not only how to open it, but to which applications he liked, how to manipulate the applications.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in Vancouver for the Olympics, and I'm telling you, he was just 2 years old. And he goes, iChat, Daddy? And I go, okay. And my wife's aunt says, I don't know how to do this. And I said, well, just stand back. He turned on the computer. He waited for it to boot up. He launched the application, and he initiated the chat.
Oh, wow.
At 2 years old.
Okay, see.
Amazing.
And I'm still explaining that to my father, which is just...
It's insane.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But, life is good. I've got my big benefit coming up this weekend.
Which we want to talk about,
Paul. It's our 11th annual.
Yes.
And it's extraordinary that, you put together these fundraising events, and you hope, that they'll... get some legs and they'll get some momentum and they'll, turn a profit, because they're expensive to put on. And, each year, we net, over $600,000 every year, sometimes over $700,000 in net. And so it's just phenomenal, what we're able to accomplish. And last year, the 10th anniversary, I, put myself back in shape and skated, and it was awesome. And this year is our 11th annual, and we have a different artistic spin. We've had everybody from Aretha Franklin to Michael Feinstein to Three Dog Night to Cheap Trick doing their Beatles set last year, which is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
We've had Leanne Rimes. We've had Liza Minnelli. We've had all these people come through, and this year we're having Vince Gill and Rodney Crowell and a couple surprise guests, and it's
now,
thrilling. It's
Scott,
scary,
would you, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I didn't mean to. It's tough with the phone. But would you please tell the listeners who the event benefits and where the money goes?
Oh, it benefits the Cleveland Clinic Taussig Cancer Institute, which is the cancer hospital at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. I have an entity there called the CARES Initiative, and CARES stands for the Cancer Alliance for Research, Education, and Survivorship. And when I went through my cancer in 97, I realized there was a lot of holes in the cancer community that needed to be filled, not just in fundraising and research, but in support and information. And so we started two things right out of the gate, the Fourth Angel Mentoring Program, where we put newly diagnosed patients with survivors of the same illness and treatment to work as kind of life coaches and role models and friends to, guide them through the experience, because it's hard for a doctor or an oncology nurse to guide a person when, the patient
Sure.
look at them and say, but you don't know how I feel. Well, when we pair them with a mentor who's been there, done that, they know how the patient feels, and they know their fears, and they know their struggles and their challenges, and they can help them through those. The next thing we started was chemocare.com, which is a website, everything you need to know about chemotherapy, how it's administered, the drugs, how to manage side effects, chat rooms, message boards, insurance information, everything you need to know about chemotherapy is in chemocare.com. And we recently had chemocare.com translated to Spanish, and we're looking for the next language now so we can really make this not only a world entity that services English and Spanish speaking people, but people from all over the world.
Oh, that's great.
So, and now we're purely research fundraising. Now we're finding young scientists that haven't gotten their initial funding yet And we're giving them, you know, their seed funding so that they can qualify for funding from the federal government and other cancer entities. So we are a very forward-thinking organization, and we're involved in every form of cancer, and we're just trying to make a difference in the world.
Well, Scott, and you know what's nice about Scott Hamilton, Paul, and Barbara here in the studio with us, and ladies and gentlemen who are listening, Scott Hamilton is somebody that when he puts his name on something, and this happens to be his own organization, but there's many celebrities who have their own organizations, this guy actually gets in and works very, very hard.
Yeah, you've said that before when describing Scott's work.
One of the nicest men on the planet, Scott. You know I feel that way about you. And And, you know, some of the other stars that skating stars that are going to be with you at the benefit on the 6th of November, Dorothy Hamill.
Yeah, first time Dorothy, a cancer survivor. I called her up this year, and I'm always shy to ask. You know, my core posse, you all ask them, they'll say, yeah, I'll be there. This is the first time I called Dorothy, and I said, yeah, and I kind of mumbled through the invitation. She said, absolutely. When is it? I said, November 6th. And she said, I'll be there.
And you,
that was easy.
And you said she's a survivor as well, Scott?
Yes, breast
cancer.
Yeah,
she had breast cancer. Yeah, yeah, and she's a survivor. And I'm trying to include, not only on the ice, but on the stage, you know, in the future, we're going to be asking, you know, musical artists who are cancer survivors to be there as well, to really make it an evening top to bottom where the experience is full and specific, and the people can draw on that, and it'll just, you know that, you know, when you've been touched by something like that, you know, the sincerity and the authenticity just shines through, and I know Dorothy being there as a cancer survivor and being amongst other cancer survivors to raise money to fight this insidious disease, you know, she'll be moved, and you know that as a survivor, you have an opportunity. It's not so much an obligation, but an opportunity to give back to the next patient. And
sure,
it feels really good to do that through events like this.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you know what? It would be, you know, having all the survivors together, it would be inspiring anyway. But but to just, you know, to for all the young people or people that are experiencing it, to see people who have completely bounced back and, you know, just to be up there, that would be, I guarantee it would be very moving and very poignant, I'm sure.
And that's the beauty of figure skating, is it's not only an athletic entity, but it's an artistic entity where you can express yourself through your performance. And the best performances are like that. You know, I think back, you know, to some of the most powerful things I've ever seen done on the ice, and most of them came out of circumstances that, you know, were extraordinary. You know, probably the most important performance I ever gave was the first one back after I was treated for cancer. And, you know,
oh yeah, we remember that.
You know, it was a 97, and mm-hmm. I stepped on the ice, and it meant the world for me to just do a performance as quickly as I could and tell everyone watching that I win,
yeah,
and you can too. Yeah. And, you know, Katya Gordieva, after she lost her pair partner and husband, at a very young age, she stepped out as a solo artist and performed like I've never seen. So figure skating can do that like no other sport. Believe no other sport can pull this off like figure skating can, and for many skaters it's very cathartic. And to be able to be in a show like this one, which everything you see and hear is live, it's live music all being performed right in front of the audience, and that gives it another energy and intensity. And then to have the skaters do this, the only time they'll ever do it this year, the show is produced, it's a 90-minute show, it's the only time it's ever done, the only time it's ever performed, right. And it takes a lot of work to put it together, and it's worth it, because we're able to raise a lot of money for cancer research.
And that's one of those, I'm sorry, Michael, go right ahead.
No, I was just going to simply say that, you know, going back to the beginning of Scott's life, he was talking about skating doing something for people, and it certainly did something for Scott when he was a young boy. A very young baby, 6 months. He was in and out of the hospital. He was being misdiagnosed with something that was going on inside. And in fact, it was his sister taking him to an ice skating rink in that cold atmosphere that suddenly started correcting his situation, which was that he wasn't absorbing the nutrients out of food that he was taking as a child, and they weren't serving the purpose that they have. And
really?
This, And the coldness of the ice, you know, seemed to put him on the right track. And Scott took to the ice naturally and started playing hockey before he started figure skating. and, you know, grew up. And I think you have figure skating to thank, certainly at that point in your life. And it's been amazing, you know, for you, Scott.
Yeah, it just seems so, you know, dramatic, or, you know, it just seems so unreal that, you know, that by chance I went to a skating rink that was just built for the university students at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. And I got on the ice, and I had a nose tube because I was fed through my nose nutrients that I wouldn't drink. It just put me on a drip, and it went through my nose. And I showed up with a nose tube over my ear, taped to my face, and I'm out there hanging onto the boards. And I had no idea that I'd fall in love with it, the whole idea of just being out there sliding around. And then all of a sudden my health started to improve, and it was miraculous that I was able to find the one thing at my size and my build and my personality that suited me. And you know, my parents did everything they could. Once they realized what was going on, they suffered greatly financially to keep me in the sport for as long as they possibly could. And then you know, through success, a couple from Chicago, philanthropists, kind of took over and said that, you know, we don't want anyone to lose their dream because of a lack of finance when we've got plenty of money. So they took over and paid for my skating and became another set of parents to me. And they really showed me what philanthropy was all about. And wow. I learned a great deal from the McLaurins. It's just amazing the difference they've made in the world, and I hope to someday be like them.
Well, there are those that say you already are, Scott.
Not like they are.
In a pretty significant way, my friend. We want to tell people about how they can see your benefit this evening before we let you go, which we still have more to talk with you about, Scott. But an evening with Scott Hamilton and friends.
At the Cleveland Quicken Loans Arena,
yes,
where the Cavaliers play. It's right downtown. Show starts at 5 o'clock on Saturday, November 6th. Tickets are available there at the arena. And, you know, there's a dinner afterwards where I'm sure there's still some seats available. That's where we raise most of the money, is at the dinner. And it's a great show. It's a wonderful thing to bring the family. It's very inspiring, and it's great to see that an event like that can really make a difference in the world. And I'm really proud of what we're able to do, not only artistically on the ice and through the music that's played for these skaters, but also what we're able to do for the community and the world. You know, it's whatever we establish through our research, you know, it's going to be shared with the world. And you save one life, you save millions, as Danny Thomas would say. You know, just do the math. And so we're really proud of the team that we've assembled that does such a great job to pull this off.
Well, and as Scott said, you can get tickets, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you in the Cleveland area. You can get them by calling 216-420-2200. For those of you outside of Cleveland, you can still get tickets by calling 800-332-2287. That's 800-332-2287. Or visit the Quicken Loans Arena website, theqarena.com. That'll also get you tickets there. And Scott, as we said earlier, Dorothy's with you. Evan Lysacek is also with you, the current reigning men's champion from the Olympics. Good Lord, Michael Weiss, Todd Eldridge, Sasha Cohen, all of the best skaters in the world. Why wouldn't they be with you, right?
Well, and you know, we always try to bring in the young ones too. And this time of year is very busy with a lot of the, you know, up and coming, you know, competitive skaters doing the Grand Prix series of events. But we've got Christina Gao coming, and it's her first time, and she was fourth at the Senior Ladies Nationals last year, and she's a star on the rise. So it's really fun for me. You know, we had Ryan Nagasu right before she won her first national championship. We've had Kimmy Meisner right after she won her world championship, and she became kind of a friend, you know, a member of our family. You know, again, before Evan won his first world championship, and before he, you know, won his Olympic gold medal, he was a part of this event. So we always are trying to bring in all the younger skaters and all the developing skaters as well, and they become a part of our family.
Well, it sounds like quite the event, Scott. We're really looking forward to it. We'll have some contact information on our site about that. But before we speak with our next guest, Barbara, who's here with us, we do want to ask you one question that we sort of baptize all of our guests with. We always ask them to share their most embarrassing or nightmarish performance story, if they have one.
That's an easy one.
Oh, it's easy? Oh, do share then.
Yeah. I was in Icecapades, all right, and it was opening night, and it was Tuesday in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and all these skaters from where I skated when I skated in Philadelphia were there, and plus all the skaters came up from Wilmington, Delaware, which is a huge training area for the ice dancers, the pair skaters. And I was coming out, and I was doing a very Olympic program to all the music from the 84 Olympic Games, and I was wearing my Olympic outfit. It was a very competitive piece of music, but there's about an inch of water on top of the ice. You know, it was just having a hard time, you know, with all the people in the audience. It was sold out to the rafters. I went around, did triple lutz, no problem. And I'm in this speed skating suit, okay? You know, if you ever saw pictures of what I wore in the Olympics, it's that very tight blue speed skating suit. It was right. Very clingy, very tight. So I go around, and I'm thinking, wow, I just went a triple lutz in this wet ice. I'm pretty good. You know, I'm proud of myself. And I come around to do this axle, half loop, mazurka, triple toe combination, and as I went up into the triple toe, I got lost. I didn't know where I was in my rotation, and I kind of hesitated a little bit. I came down, and both of my toes went into the ice first, which is like a hinge. I went straight down, and I was able to catch it with my elbows, right? I hit my knees and my elbows, and the next move I do is this big down, up, big stretch move into a spin. And as I looked, I went down, up, and I looked, and I had a circle of wet around both knees, my elbows, and the middle. It looked like I wet my pants, and I still had 3.5 minutes of music to go in front of all my friends and probably about 9,000 people at the Philadelphia Spectrum Arena.
And
so that one steps, you know, that one kind of jumps to the forefront of, you know, skating like I was incontinent.
Yeah.
Jumps
to the forefront, no pun intended.
No, absolutely. Oh, boy.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
They're just still getting off the ice and drying that one off and coming back on. It was, you're stuck out there.
Oh, that's
true. And that blue is definitely a different color than the rest of the costume.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, well.
A nice shade of navy. Well, Scott Hamilton, thank you.
It went from a blue teal to a navy.
Exactly. Scotty Hamilton, we love you. You know that. Thank you for joining us on today's edition of State of the Arts. We wish you the best of luck with the show on November 6th, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, an evening with Scott Hamilton and friends at the Quicken Arena in Cleveland. Be there. I promise an amazing evening with Mr. Vince Gill and a host of the Olympic champions and the best skaters in the world. Scott, thank you, and tell your lovely wife, Tracy, hello, and the boys, Max and Aiden.
Yeah. Hey, miraculous. This is the longest I've ever been on the phone without Max coming in and taking the phone off my ear. So this has been a true miracle.
Well,
and congratulations on your listenership and your growth and the show, and I wish you guys the best. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure meeting you, Scott. Thank you so much, and thank your son for letting us get through it.
I'll tell him right now.
Okay. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, what a nice man.
Very nice. One of the nicest men on the planet, actually. Privileged to represent him for almost 25 years. So.
Oh, that's right. You've handled PR for him.
That's right.
You?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a nice little weekend. I wanted to just share some information with you all about what we do here on the show. We actually go out and review theater here.
Yes, I hope to get back to that sometime soon.
You
I've been so busy
schedule.
With my show, I haven't been
Absolutely.
Able to.
Absolutely. But I will tell you that one of our guests in the past, Mr. Stan Mazin, who is a wonderful director of theater and a former choreographer, actually. He is associated with the Group Repertory Theater in North Hollywood. And he came on to promote his production of Barefoot in the Park, Neil Simon's Barefoot in the Park. It's not very often that Neil Simon gets done anymore, you know, in today's theater world. And I went to see the production on its closing weekend, which was this past weekend, and I must say that I was very, very pleasantly surprised to see such a fantastic production of this show, which we all know this show, right? But I haven't seen Neil Simon's work on the stage in years and years and years, and probably this show I haven't seen in 25, 30 years, at least. Stan did an amazing job. The acting with the company was fantastic. The set, the scenery, the lighting, all of it. Everybody in that company did their job. And it was wonderfully entertaining. It was a great night out in theater.
Right.
So I think that's kind of a testament to the Group Repertory Theater and the fact that they are, their company rather, and the fact that they are having their first full season ever. We're doing about 7 or 8 shows.
Really? They announced the whole season?
They announced the whole season, and one of them is going to be a favorite of mine, Wait Until Dark. Remember that movie with Audrey Hepburn and Richard
Clement? Oh, love
Richard
that Clement? Movie. Love that movie. And Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin, yeah. Yes, exactly. So that's coming up. But if you have a chance to go to the Group Repertory website, visit them and learn about their season, and that's www.thegrouprep.com. Lonnie Chapman Theater is their theater in North Hollywood, and that's on Burbank Boulevard there. But worth, I had a smile across my face.
How long does it run, Michael?
How long did
how long
six,
does
6 weeks, I believe.
Okay,
it was.
And it's only
September 24th through the 31st of October.
Oh, okay.
So it just closed.
Oh, it just closed, but
just
you have that whole season coming up.
Yeah, but the season's coming up.
And great.
Then yesterday went down to, as I said earlier at the top of the show, went down to be with Andrea McArdle and at Musical Theater West's production of Annie. And it is currently running through November 14th, this time, of course, with Andrea playing the role of Miss Hannigan. This is only the second time that she's done that role. And I must say that this is a production that knocked me, for a loop, too. The young lady that plays the part that Andrea originated on Broadway is a young girl who is all of 12 years old by the name of Melody Hollis, and she was like looking at Andrea McArdle at that time, at that age, a voice from heaven, you know, one of those big belting voices. And the production was directed by Stephen Glaudini, who's also the artistic director and producer of Musical Theater West. Did a fabulous job. It was just a top-rated show. Beautiful orchestra in the pit playing all those wonderful pieces of music. Tomorrow being, you know, the signature song of the show, and Easy Street, you know, which was so great, and all of them, the children, all of the kids playing the orphans were fantastic. Michael Paternostro playing Rooster, in addition to Betts Malone, who was also in the show, and Betts was playing Lily St. Regis, just top notch.
I don't think people know. I think because Annie was so popular when it came out, I think that people think it's a lot kitschier than it actually is. It's actually a very poignant and powerful show. I think just because of the popularity of Tomorrow and how much that got overplayed and all that, that people, they think they know what the show is. And those that haven't seen it don't really, you know, this, I mean, with it being during the Depression, as you mentioned earlier, we were talking about earlier, this,
it fits it's right very into touching. These times.
Yeah, very much,
you know,
so.
It's very reminiscent. I mean, I found myself tearing up. Excuse me, several times during the performance. And
yeah, but you tear up at card tricks. That's not
that's,
a good...
So I'm a cheap date. Is that what you're talking?
Yeah. I don't mean to make light of it, Michael. I apologize.
No, but please, ladies and gentlemen, Paul's going to tell you how to see this production.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I will in a moment, as soon as I find it.
Do you want me to start it for you?
You know what? Why don't you tell them how to find this production,
absolutely,
Michael?
To see Musical Theater West production of Annie.
Oh, wait. I think if it's starring Andrew McArdle live on stage now through November 14th.
That would be
the one. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
You can purchase tickets online at www.musical.org. Boy, how did they secure that domain name? Musical.org. Or by phone at 562-856-1999, extension 4. And, Michael, please do mention about the importance of what's coming up with the holiday season.
Well, as we approach the gift-giving holiday season, giving the experience of the live performing arts is perhaps one of the most touching and inspiring gifts of all time. And we suggest that you visit performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
And we also encourage you to consider giving a gift of financial support, no matter how much or how little, to one of our favorite charitable arts organizations, the LA Stage Alliance and Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And you can find out all about both of those organizations at stateoftheartsla.com.
Indeed.
And now, please, Michael, if
yes.
you would, introduce this lovely patient woman who has been with us for so long, who we now get to speak to.
Our next guest is one of a rare breed of performers who has enjoyed a lucrative, multifaceted career in the entertainment business. From her years as a fashion model, a comedian, a singer, working with such notables as Frank Sinatra, Milton Berle, Don Rickles, and Buddy Hackett, to name but a few, to becoming a television and film production executive and an author, please welcome Barbara Van Orton. Welcome, Barbara.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Barbara, I tell you, as Michael was reading that about who you've worked with, I just realized it reads like a laundry list of all of my heroes. You just went straight down. Frank Sinatra, Milton Berle, Don Rickles, Buddy Hackett. I'm just so impressed. It's a pleasure to
they
meet you.
They were wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. You know, Michael, you were talking about Annie, and it was
yes.
such a wonderful show. May I just tell you a little something about
please.
So I think it was in the 70s. I had just moved to Chicago. I'm originally from New York and New Jersey, but I had moved to Chicago because I was working, doing Mr. Kelly's and the Playboy Clubs and various other, nightclub things. Anyway, but while I was in New York, I had come out of the William Morris Agency one day, and who is there but this man with boots, hairy boots, and a hairy, shaggy jacket, and just long hair, and it's Marty Charnin, and I didn't know who it was, and I said, who wrote the lyrics for Annie? And I said, oh, my God. And he said, I will walk you, kid. You can't walk around New York like this because you can't, and I will help you, and I'll take you and I'll walk into your next appointment. So I thought, well, all right. So anyway, he became a dear friend. But I had moved to Chicago, and I get this telephone call, and it's – but at the time, I was in Europe because I was doing the agencies and the different
embassies?
Embassies. Different embassies I would be singing and so forth. But anyway, I was away. But when I came home, on my machine is, Barbara, I'm starting a new play, and it's going to be a musical. And if you think you want to get involved with it or back it or put some money into it or whatever it is, please give me a call. Well, by the time I called Marty Charnin back, he said, Barbara, I've got all the financing. I said, well, what project is it? He says, it's Annie. Well, I wish I had invested. Not only was it a wonder, it's still a wonderful, wonderful show.
All right.
But anyway, Marty Charnin was a dear friend. I have not seen him in years. In fact, hopefully he comes to my November 7th engagement at
Sterling's upstairs. Now, what is this? Sterling's,
well, Paul,
what?
It's the number one supper club in all of Los Angeles. It's dedicated to presenting the best of Broadway performers in concert and nightclub artists like Barbara Van Orden, the Great American Songbook, and we are thrilled to have her on our stage on this Sunday, November
7th. This Sunday?
This Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely have information about your performance, Barbara. I got to say, Barbara, I was looking through this promotional material that you have. I don't mean to jump around topics-wise, but I just noticed that you also have a credit here from Welcome Back, Cotter, which was one of my favorite shows. What did you do on that?
Well, I had moved. Well, as I said, I'm born in New Jersey, lived in New York a lot of years, and then moved out here. And the reason why I moved to California, because I was going to play the French teacher to Dr. Woodman, a love interest.
Oh,
and,
really?
And at the time, I had to be a redhead because that's the way it was.
He was the principal, right? Principal Woodman. Yes.
And I'm tall, and of course, he spoke to my chest, and that was that type of thing. Anyway, so I did that. I played the French teacher, and just very proper and very nice. And here is this Dr. Woodman under my arm, just about all the time. But it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing it.
Oh, I tell you, I loved that show.
You have a good friend who was on that show. Don't
What's
you?
That?
You have a good friend. Oh, not on Welcome Back, Cotter. I'm thinking of Head of the Class. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, that was a different, but also school themed. Yes.
Well, that was one of the many things in television, and you also had your own production company
as well,
Cinequest, right?
When nightclubs kind of died out, you know, we all started back when we did the Catskill Mountains, which I did, and then all the Playboy clubs, and the various upstairs, the downstairs, and I can't even think of the names of all these rooms anymore, but I'm sure they're all gone. But it kind of died out, and then you found in Vegas was going to be Frank, Liza, and Dean, rather than an opening act with the main... act. So I said, well, you know, what should we do here? So I figured, well, you know, I will go in the business end of the business. And also,
Barbara.
I was tired of being 5'8", 113 pounds, which meant, you know, we were going to eat the radish or the carrot, you know, that type of thing. And a redhead, I was coming out of the hairdressers already, the roots were coming in because my hair is dark. But anyway, so I went in and I worked for someone named Arnold Sank. He was a personal manager. He used to be a Morris agent, and he had, a lot of different people. Leonard Nimoy, and I mean, the names went on and on. And here I am doing the whole thing and getting taking all the notes and writing the things that out. And during lunchtime, I'd be out and I'd be picking up clients for him and bringing him back to the office. Arnold, look at this guy. He's going to be very good. And, you know, we're laughing. Anyway, bottom line to all this is, that lasted for just a very short period of time, because then I had gotten a request from someone in the business, that a lovely person, said, why don't you form a production company? because it was, you know, personal management. So I said, fine, I think I'll do that. So I did, and I had a lot of writers, producers, and directors. And then one day I got a call from Lou Wasserman's office, and it was, why don't I relocate on the Universal lot and form a production company? So I took a producer that I had, Steve Halpern, who had, oh my God, many series on television, and then a writer and a director, and off we went, and we came into Universal, and we formed the company Cinequest. And also, while I was in my production company, before my management company, I had someone walk in the door one day with about a 300-pound kid with red hair, dreadlocks, from New Mexico, Jaron Lanier, and he said to me, the Morris office sent me over to see you because I'm looking for management, and I have this thing called virtual reality. Well, at the time, nobody knew what the heck that was, but later to find out that Universal had been using, we're going to partner with Matashusta, we're going to buy in, and they had been using it, teaching their air pilots how to fly airplanes using this virtual reality. So in comes us, Cinequest, bringing virtual reality in, and we did quite well. It was going to go as a ride on City Walk, and as you know, on City Walk, everything is called a ride.
Right.
Doug Trumbull was going to do the special effects and all that type of thing. So,
now, Barbara, someone who's had as varied, just describing that in the, you know, the computer world and entertainment and performing that you did leading up to that, someone with as varied a career as you have had, what do you enjoy the most? I mean, what looking back on it, I mean, is there one thing that stands above the rest? Was it sort of overall just different experiences, or is there one thing that really sort of comes to the forefront when you think about what really fills your heart?
Well, you know, I've enjoyed every single thing. I really have. And when one thing would stop or it would not be there any longer to do, or, you know, like I said, nightclubs, and then you went on to different things. I went from modeling to print work, my face on a lot of magazine covers, to doing nightclubs, as I said, and then going into doing some television sitcoms, you know, the Welcome Back Cotters and the Baa Baa Black Sheeps and a couple of others, and then to being a personal manager. And then from personal manager, my own production company, for producing a lot of things. I've enjoyed every single facet. I've done everything in the entertainment industry except the record world. I don't know the record world, but I have a lot of friends I call up when I need, you know,
you
need, how do
question.
I get to this, or how do I write? Exactly.
But you need the questions answered.
That's exactly it, right.
But your singing must have a very special place in your heart, because it's kind of full circle with you now. You're going back to that and working
amazing.
Clubs.
Yeah, it's amazing, because I never thought I'd be doing this again. I mean, I really think life comes full circle. I didn't before, but I do now.
No, I agree. And you know, I wanted to ask you one thing, too. I mean, when you were a young girl and just starting the singing career, you actually had the prestigious honor of opening for Frank. I guess it's how you met Frank before, and then he asked you to open for him at the Plaza Hotel in the room there.
Well, actually, I started my career as the Breck girl at 16 years old, Breck hair commercials. But going on to do nightclubs, I had, as I said, I was working the Catskill Mountains, worked with many of the greats.
Right.
Then went on to do the Playboy clubs, worked again with many of the greats. And then I did Vegas also. And one night when I was working with Shecky Green, Frank Sinatra came to see the show. And of course, we were all thrilled, you know. And after the show, he asked me, he said, you know, I have a gig in New York. He said, in the Persian Room at the Plaza Hotel. And he said, would you open for me? Of course, I said no. No, I was thrilled. I was thrilled. And I said, yes, of course. And so I went on to do, and I've worked with Frank quite a few times. And he was very kind to me, a very, very nice man. I know he had a lot of PR situations through his life, but he really was a very kind man. And, you know, either he thought very well of you, or he did not think very well of you, and I was very fortunate to have the fact that
you were very protected.
Yes,
by
he was like a father to me, and I was so naive and so green at the time. I don't know how I didn't get into trouble, but anyway.
Well, you told us a funny story before the show when we were in the lobby waiting to come into the studio about he put the word out to you.
Oh yes, yes.
Via Soupy Sales.
Yeah.
Yes.
Poor Soupy, he just died. You know. But anyway, I was working. And I would, as we did in those days, you know, the girl singer always worked with a male comedian or a male singer. So you would open for them, do your 20 minutes, and then they would do their act. And as I said, I worked with so many of them, lovely people. But and at the time, you know, many of the male performers would like to maybe have dinner with you afterwards and have other dessert. And, of course, you were dessert. But so... And then, you know, you always tried it. And at the time, I was always doing various things to get away from it. Like, oh, my goodness, I have to go here, or I lock myself in the bathroom, or all kinds of stuff just to get away from it, not to have it happen to me.
Right.
And but one particular night, I happened to be on the telephone. My son was it was an infant, a little boy. And, Mommy, I've got the flu. And, of course, I'm performing in Vegas. And at the time, we were living in Chicago. And I said, oh, my gosh. And then so Frank had me going by the door, and he heard me say to him, oh, did you take your ginger ale, and are you feeling okay? And anyway, nothing more of that other than, gee, I hope the little boy's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went on to continue, you know, the different gigs that I would have around the country, the various places, like I said, you would work with the comedians. And one night I was working with Soupy Sales, and he said, I would really like to get a little more involved with you. He said, but, you know, he said, the word is out. I said, the word is out? Oh, my God, what happened? And I'm thinking something, what word? And it seemed that... he said, well, I'd like to. He said, but I'd have to answer to Frank. And I went, oh, my good, Frank. So it would seem that Frank Sinatra had said to everyone that you will work with Miss Van Orden very nicely, and you will not have any foolishness going on, or you will answer to me. And it was so wonderful. But through the years, as time went on, every now and then I would get a call from Frank, and he'd say, well, how is our little boy? And, of course, our little boy's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But he was a dear, dear man, very kind to me.
Oh, that's you know, to have, you know, to Frank put the word out, you know, to get hands off the girl's
center. Better than that.
There's no appeal to Supreme Court. That's it.
We don't have a lot more time, and I do want to get to Barbara's to share your story, Barbara, if you have one of your nightmare on stage experience. But before you do, tell us that. Michael, would you share the contact information for people who want to see Barbara on Sunday?
Absolutely.
How does one find out how to get tickets for Sterling's
Upstairs?
Simply
call Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's at 818-754-8700. Again, 818-754-8700 to make your reservations. And it is a supper club. It's one of the few supper clubs in Los Angeles.
And it's a blast. I mean, Michael, we've talked about this before, but I've seen about a half a dozen things there, and it's such a wonderful night out. It's really just the most comfortable room, and you really do feel like you've not only gone to New York, but you feel like you've gone back in time a little, because that whole sense of elegance and about the, you know, the cabaret and all that is really captured there. It's a wonderful evening and highly suggested. But Barbara, you have varied experience. I'd be very anxious to hear what your most awkward or embarrassing onstage experience.
I just had one, funny enough, my last engagement.
Really?
Yes.
How timely.
Right. I was in Palm Springs, and I was getting ready to go on, and there was about 20 minutes wait time. And around me were curtains. You know, it wasn't a room with a door. It was curtains. And I'm standing there, and, of course, I can't sit down because of the gown and all of that. But there's a knock on the curtain, not someone pulling the curtain, not someone talking through the curtain, but a knock. How do you knock on a curtain?
Yeah.
And I'm looking out, and I open the little peephole, and I'm looking. I don't see anything. I look down. Here is this little boy, about 8 years old, with a Frank Sinatra of all things, like a man hat on. And he goes, can I have your autograph? And I thought, this is unusual, because there were no children there. It wasn't that type of thing. So I said, of course. So he comes in, and I said, you know, the curtains. And his father said, can I take a picture with you? And I said, oh, absolutely. So I'm signing it, and I said, how would you like this signed? To whom am I signing this card? He said, Sebastian, with an I-A-N. Said, okay. So I said, what shall I write, Sebastian? He says, well, make it good. I said, okay. So now I'm writing. Anyway, he goes outside, and father takes another picture. I'm now ready to go on. I go on, and I'm now halfway through my act. I'm right in the middle of a song. And the stage, there's a little step down to the floor, so it wasn't a big high, you know, step. But I hear this, I'm going now. I'm leaving. And I look down, there's this little kid with a man hat on, the Frank Sinatra hat on, and he jumps up on the stage and he says, well, I'm enjoying this show. I said, oh, I'm happy that you are. I said, oh, my goodness. I said, well, I said, maybe I should make you president of my fan club. He said, I think so. And then I said to him, well, I'm so happy, Sebastian, that you came. And he says, I speak French. I said, that's terrific. I said, man. I only know merci beaucoup. He said, well, that's all you need to know. Anyway, I said, well, thank you for coming, Sebastian. And he says, well, I've got to go. I've got to go. Jumps off the stage. The father takes him out the door.
Kids and dogs.
Precious. I mean, just
but
priceless.
Kids and dogs.
Kids and
it
dogs.
Was
that's
wonderful.
Nice.
Oh, that's
and the
hysterical.
Audience loved him. He's right in the middle of a song. I've got to go. And I didn't know where it was coming from. And I looked down. We were all
hilarious.
Laughing. So it was a wonderful thing. So
that's
I don't know if it was
hysterical.
It wasn't embarrassing. It was adorable.
Well, it might have been initially embarrassing, but I'm sure it endeared you so much to the audience. Because
wonderful.
It's one of those situations that you find yourself in where how do you deal with a heckler or something like that who is not only doesn't know he's heckling, but would never intentionally disrupt. It's just all that enthusiasm of the child is right there.
Exactly.
And a seasoned performer knows how to deal with it.
Sebastian, with an I-A-N, yes.
I love
you
that.
Could have said, get lost, I work by myself. You know, but you
no,
didn't.
He was so precious.
Normally,
so
I work alone, kid.
But 8 years old, oh my God, it was wonderful.
Oh, that's really... That's
Barbara, thank you so much for joining us and her lovely husband, Elton. They're newlyweds, by the way,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen. Elton and Barbara.
March 11th.
March 11th,
year.
Yeah. With an amazing honeymoon that followed. Thank you so much, and we'll see
thank
you Sunday
you.
At Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, 818-754-8700, in beautiful Studio City for Barbara Van Orden's headlining debut.
And to check out what's coming up next week on State of the Arts, please visit us online at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com. Michael, I look forward to chatting with you next week.
Thank you. Same here, Paul.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.